gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain megahertz. Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
Oh, look at all of the things we've got in store for you this week. Keith M. Cedar and I are going to talk about my new iPad Air M3. Marty's going to talk about the Urban Armor Gear Slim Power Bank and Stand. On the Scam Series, don't hide the scam. Share your experience. Steve Keske's going to be talking about cyberstalking, and I'm going to be talking about why privacy matters, and it really does. We do have a lot of listener questions. Ryan says, I hear that IT jobs pay well, but that you need passion to really succeed, and I will definitely address that. Caleb wants to know why his computer keeps slowing down even though he updates it, and that might be part of the clue there. Diego asks, why does my internet provider charge so much for mediocre service? And, of course, if you missed any of that, of course, you can check out the website at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. I do have the podcast there, but you can also reach out to me with your computer questions and your technology concerns. Of course, feel free to reach out to me in person on the phone at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-637-3888. And that phone number, by the way, works all the time, not just while you're hearing this on the air. On the off chance I don't answer, please leave a message. I will get back to you just as soon as I can, because, yes, I do have a day job. Let's dive into the news from the past week. And one of the first things that really popped up on my radar here is, so we've been hearing about some proofs of concept regarding artificial intelligence. And these proofs of concept really throw a lot of shade on Apple's claim of AI needing massive amounts of CPU and memory. Last week, it was a slimmed down AI program on Windows 98, and this was a machine that had 128 megs of RAM. Okay, so we're talking not a lot of space. I know that there are portainers, containers, Docker containers that are available to go on to things like my Synology NAS that will run AI. This week, someone ran ChatGPT utilizing the OpenAI programming interface on an iPhone 3GS. We're talking years ago. We're right now in the iPhone 16 series. This is ages old technology. Now, OpenAI programming interface, that means it is truly coming from the folks who make ChatGPT or linking into this. So there is probably a good amount of offloading in regards to this latter item, the iPhone 3GS version, to the cloud. But is that really much different from what Siri or any of their competitors have done for years? Look, the app is out there. And if you're interested in loading the iOS app, it's available. But you have to have a jailbroken phone to do it. And a bunch more. Look, if you don't know how to jailbreak your phone, perhaps you could ask ChatGPT. Yeah, I don't suggest jailbreaking your phone. Zelle. This is a name that has been throughout our households for a while now. And they're shutting down their app. Now, this may seem odd, but it's not as bad as one might think. It was originally envisioned as a competitor to Venmo and many of these other person-to-person items, transfers of cash for goods or services or whatever. But it actually only had about 2% of their transactions happening on the app. So they threw up their hands and go, why are we doing this? Most of the transfers amongst their 151 million users were happening elsewhere, like on your bank account and so forth. This isn't a surprise, as they actually announced it a while back, but it does mean things are changing. Zelle has had a rough ride with many problems with scammers leveraging the app and a lack of keeping pace with their competitors, but it doesn't seem like it's going away, just the app itself, in a world that is ironically filled with, you guessed it, apps. Another app to talk about is Instagram. Meta, which owns Facebook, but also Instagram, is starting to make a shift in protecting youth. And I applaud this. This week, it was announced that all teenage users are going to have parent permission in order to live stream whatever they're doing. Teen accounts on Instagram were rolled out back in September, but this new announcement includes Facebook and Messenger. The new move includes new verification methods to ensure age, lockdowns against inappropriate content, and blocking unwanted contact from people who are not following you. And I support the idea of corporations moving forward like this and taking proactive measures, especially. And I do hope that the others follow suit all the way along, whoever else is out there in the social media world, rather than us seeing some draconian and misguided legislation from non-tech savvy politicians. Speaking of which, two separate law proposals during the past week have states chasing after major tech companies for money. Minnesota is working on a plan to tax social media platforms with more than $100,000, what looks like a flat fee plus a fee for each user on the platform. What are we talking about? $165,000 a month plus 50 cents per person on the platform. And this isn't an approach to reducing problems, but simply to chase after deep pockets to reduce state spending or rather their debt. Washington State went in a different direction, that of dating apps, with a dollar for each person on Match.com or any of the other similar apps and platforms for every person that lives in the state, a dollar for each person that lives in the state. And this is going to go towards funding domestic violence programs. Both of these actually may run counter to federal laws that prevent taxes on things like internet access or excessive taxes on e-commerce. Either way, I look at this as just the start of a bizarre chase by government to find more money in deep pockets, and I'm not fond of that idea. Google showed off another pair of augmented reality glasses this week. Well, it's not really augmented reality. I'll cover that in a sec. This is a field they've tinkered with for a long time now. This started off with the infamous Google Glass project back over 10 years ago. And at the time, it was obvious, not really charming. It was functional, but I wore a set of those for just a matter of about 10 minutes, not even that, just to kind of see what it was like and figure it out. It worked, but at $1,500 in really obvious appearance, it really wasn't of interest to a whole lot of people. At TED, that's the Technology, Entertainment, and Design Expo, this past week they showed up to talk about another one called XR, or Extended Reality. Whatever, we're still looking at something that they admit it's not ready for the public. And we have all been seeing a lot of these different AR and VR goggles for a long time now. I'm hoping that things have advanced tech-wise, as the look is quite a bit more stylish now, and it's not much different than a bulky set of Ray-Bans, which, well, that would be similar to the Meta glasses that are out there. I have my own wants for a set of smart glasses, so I am going to watch how this unfolds in the coming months, and someday, somehow, I may wind up with a set of smart glasses. Not yet, though. I used to have seconds turned on within Windows. What do I mean by that? Well, down in the system tray, where the time sits, it was important for me to have a reference so I could do fairly exact timings for various things. I'd be able to look down and say, okay, this took 10 seconds, this took 58 seconds, whatever it was. a recent update this past month to Windows 10 took that away. The claim from one side is that it's a burden on the speed of our computers, which is a strange consideration, considering the level of graphics power we have, the simplicity of time, and the fact that digital watches have been showing seconds on them with far less processing capability since I was, a kid. The other side claims it's a little, small little push for us to move to Windows 11, but I think that seems like a stretch as well. Either way, it's strange. Coming up next, Diego has a question. Why does my internet provider charge so much for mediocre service? I'll address that next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
The original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Diego reached out to me. Why does my internet provider charge so much for mediocre service? Diego reached out to me. You can do it too. ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns. Why does my internet provider charge so much for mediocre service? And I get it. It's like paying for some kind of luxury automotive, and instead you get a used bicycle with a fresh coat of paint. You expect something better. You expect something amazing, and instead what you get is kind of the same old recycled, retreaded, regurgitated item that everybody else gets. And I will tell you that first and foremost, there has been, for a long time, a lack of competition. The internet service provider, in many areas, operates as a de facto monopoly. Most of the companies out there, these different internet service providers, do not want to go forward and drag out the infrastructure to every location across the United States. So they look to see if they can get into an area where there is no competitor. And they do look for areas where, hey, we've got the infrastructure already here. It's going to be cheaper for us to move into this new housing development than anybody else. And they work out a deal with the housing developer, and they work out all kinds of arrangements so they continue to expand their force within a particular city, within a particular state, and so forth. And this is a problem. It has been a problem because there is a big expense up front to bring out all of the different things that are needed to provide internet service to all of us. So this already starts up a distinct problem for each of us. Along the way, they also have clamped down. They have set up speed tiers. They say, well, you know what? Most people don't need anything more than this. So we're going to say that 90% of our customers are going to be perfectly happy if we give them 50 megabit or 100 megabit. And they're going to be happy if their upload speeds are 10 megabit or 20 megabit. So we're going to make most of our packages fit this. And then anybody else who really wants the other service, we're going to say it's business level service, and we're going to tack on a lot more money for that. And it's unfortunate that they go in that direction, but they are actually limiting all of our speeds based off of that. We can see that they are artificially squashing these down when we see news like, I think it was Comcast in recent months, which said all of a sudden, we're going to double everybody's speed cap. We're going to double everybody's speed out there across our entire base at no extra charge. Well, the only way they can do that is by just admitting that they were already capping everybody, reducing everybody artificially. And they've realized, the cable company that announced that, they've realized that there are now competitors that are coming along and are moving into this space. Whether we start talking about fiber providers, where we have gig up and gig down, or even better speeds than that. We have Starlink, which is providing internet, high internet speeds, higher internet speeds in some areas than what the local provider is capable of giving. So this is already kind of setting us up for a situation where, yes, they have little interest in giving us more speed. They want us to pay more if we really need more and things like that. But along the way, they do start setting in a number of different hidden fees and different service charges. These different extra costs that get thrown in there start driving your price up, and they're more than happy to do that. Most of the different internet service providers, when we start talking cable, they're going to throw on a modem rental fee. That is, okay, modems, you can get a modem for $100. Well, they're going to rent it to you, and they're going to rent it to you at $10 a month or whatever it is that they're going to charge you for that. And then one of the big, huge things that we keep seeing a lot of people go through is these mysterious service charges. Oh, well, this is our paperwork fee, and this is our this fee and that fee and all of that. So you think you're going to pay $90 a month or $70 a month or whatever it is. And instead, well, you wind up with another $15 in additional fees, $20 or even more. And that is a distinct issue there. I will tell you, I look upon a lot of the industry with a certain level of concern. They go through and they charge a very high fee for the service that they're providing because they get a ton of profit off of this. A lot of the different internet service providers are delaying upgrading their networks. They're relying on decades-old cables. And that's unfortunate because a lot of the infrastructure investment to improve is actually really minimal. The upgrade of switches that will give better speeds, the update of a lot of the stuff in the office is really set up. It's prepared for it, but they don't want to replace the old switches. They don't want to replace the old hardware until it actually ups and dies. Of course, we all know that the customer service is really frustrating, and in some ways, I think it might even be designed for it. You have your long hold times. You have your support lines. It takes forever. It's harder for you to demand better service. You're only sitting there. You really want to get your problem fixed. You're not, by the time you get to the end, you've forgotten that you really want to ask about better throughput. You want to ask for better bandwidth. I will tell you, these are all very frustrating things. I am going to give you a little bit of guidance, though. I'm going to give this to all of you. The idea that you are stuck with whatever they give you is kind of outdated. I would strongly suggest to everyone out there listening, schedule some time, not today, but in the next few months, to contact your internet service provider and pay them a call. You want to talk to them about making sure you're on the right plan. And this goes for both your internet service provider, but also your cellular provider. Any of the services which are marketed on a wide scale. And you can talk to them. You can say, am I really on the best plan for me? And you might even talk to what's called customer retention specialists if you have a better option available to you. Hey, you know, I'm calling you because really I've been evaluating moving over to fiber, which is now available to me in my area. What kind of deal can you work out for me that might incentivize me to continue using you, Mr. Cable Company? What kind of thing can you provide to me? Can I get a better speed? Can I get a lower price? How can we work this out so I don't move on? I will tell you that that may soothe some of the issue. You must be prepared. You must plan for at least 2 hours on the phone. The first hour to get to that customer retention specialist. The second hour for the very, very long conversation while they look across different things. They put you on hold and they keep you waiting and waiting and waiting. Of course, you may consider fiber if fiber is available in your area, or maybe mobile hotspots, or yes, even Starlink. They may provide you a better value than what you're getting right now. So explore your options. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. That's how you can reach out to us with your computer questions, your technology concerns. We're more than happy to address any of them. Keith M. Cedar joins me now. And Keith, something I've been awaiting for, well, actually quite a while. You and I have both discussed this. I knew that iOS 18... deprecated my iPad 6. It said, oh, we're no longer going to update that. So I've been eyeing.
Well, wait a second. So that means the glass ceiling of your iPad is iPad OS 17.
17.7.6 or something like that, whatever.
But the first number being you cannot go any higher than iOS 17 on this device.
Yeah.
So I actually have 2 iPad Pros myself that have a ceiling of iPad OS 16, and one that's slightly newer that will also, just like you, not go any higher than iPad OS 17.
Well, so, my next one's probably going to go to, I don't know, 21 or 22.
Are you planning on getting a new one?
It arrived. It arrived.
Ordering one, or it might be here sometime this week.
It arrived specifically as you and I are recording this. It arrived 6 hours ago.
Excellent. Now, you were expecting multiple packages, were you not, with this?
Both of the packages arrived.
And both packages. So there was two packages.
Okay, technically three packages.
Do we have three components to your new iPad, Benjamin?
So what I have is I have the...
Well, hang on a second, hang on. Your previous one is an iPad 6.
Yes.
The standard 9.7-inch...
9.3, whatever it is, yeah.
Okay, so just a regular-sized iPad.
Yeah.
And what are we replacing that one with, Benjamin?
So I pondered and I waffled between going with the iPad Mini, which was updated to the A17? Was it A17?
I think so.
Because I kind of wanted to poke around with Apple Intelligence. Mm-hmm. That allowed it.
Like that smaller form factor. My daughter has an iPad Mini, and she loves the form factor strictly for its portability.
I waffled over that, and what it came down to was the M3 processor in the iPad Air. Okay. When they announced the A17 processor for the straight iPad, no, was it A17?
I think so.
A17, but it doesn't do Apple Intelligence.
Correct.
Or whatever. Maybe it's A16. And it's A17 for the iPad Mini, whatever it was. So I looked at the three of them and I said, all right, I want the Apple Intelligence. And the better processor is the M3. And I managed to get a little bit of a discount on it. So.
Really?
So I wound up here with I've got the iPad Air M3. Is that what they're calling it? Is that the official name?
And what capacity did you get?
128.
Okay.
So I get the bare bones memory spec, but I did that because the only thing that I ran into with my previous at a 32 gig was when I loaded on multiple movies onto Netflix, and we're talking a bunch of movies onto Netflix and Amazon Prime for mm-hmm. traveling and having movies with me on the airplane and so forth. And I said, I'm for the life of it, I'm not going to likely exceed that 128 gig.
What color did you get?
Slate gray.
Space gray.
Space gray. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Which is odd. It's like, okay, you're going to take this thing anyway. Who even cares what color it is?
So I did an interesting thing, which is the first for me, and that is I did get the engraving on it, and I got the engraving on the Apple Pencil Pro.
That's like when Steve Jobs and all his crew put their names on the inside of the first Macintosh.
Yeah.
Unless you open it up, only they know it's there.
Well, yeah. So right now it's bare bones. It's exposed to all to see. But the reality is, I've in the next day or so, I've got a case coming from Urban Armor Gear, which is a great company. My wife uses the Urban Armor Gear case, which is a bit more durable.
Are you putting a glass screen protector on it?
I'm debating on that.
Make a recommendation? Because I literally put this on all of my clients' iPads and iPhones. Mm-hmm. I love a brand called Invisible Shield by a company called Zag.
Yes, I'm very familiar with them.
The nice thing about it is you could order them on Amazon and install them yourself. But if you're not really confident doing that, you can go to a Zag kiosk at a mall.
And they'll do it for you, yeah.
I have a really important question about your new iPad, Benjamin. Did you go for Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi plus cellular?
Wi-Fi. I had a cellular back a number of years ago, and I found that I didn't use it enough. And these days, the hotspot is going to take care of any kind of needs there. I will tell you, I went through the unboxing process. Most of it went well, although I did struggle at one point. Mm-hmm. I started whatever the process is that migrates from your old iPad over to the new iPad.
Why didn't you call your Apple consultant friend?
I didn't struggle that hard. I'm an IT professional. I was like, okay, when I was in the middle of it, it ran the software update. And and then I had to go back and do the migration process all over again. It wasn't all that bad. It wasn't all that horrible or horrendous, but it was a minor annoyance. I would have liked to have completed the migration process, then had the update, or the other way around. It updates and then, you know, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers. It works. Okay. So I lost whatever it was, 20 minutes, less than that, 15 minutes of my day.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah. So in the next couple of weeks, let's circle back and I'll tell you my experience with it. I'm actually kind of enjoying it right now. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seador.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. That's one of many ways to reach out to us. Of course, we are interested in answering your computer questions and addressing your technology concerns, whatever they may be. If I don't answer, please do leave a message. I will get back with you. Marty Winston joins me now. Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Well, have you ever wished that the people at Lazy Boy would make an easel for your phone?
Like built into the sofa? Or you're saying a case?
Just a way for the phone to recline a bit.
Okay.
Stand up, let you read it, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And they're doing more stuff with those recliners and special features built into them. So why not do that for the easel, right?
Yeah.
Urban Armor.
Here, my phone. You've worked so hard today. Go ahead and kick back. Relax.
Would you like some lemonade?
Yeah, exactly.
Urban Armor Gear.
Yeah.
A really cute little thing. It's they call it their SRGE, and I have no idea what that stands for, but it is a slim power bank and easel stand in one thing, and it also has a feature that lets it work very directly with MagSafe phones.
Okay, all right.
So let me try to start with 5,000 milliamp hours.
Okay.
That's enough time for you to get to a real charger later, I guess.
Sure, yeah, that's generally a couple of charges.
Yeah, and if your phone's starting with one, you're probably good for the day.
Easily, yeah.
And if you're not, shut up.
You're talking too much. I get it, yeah.
Now, this thing, if you drop a slice of cheese onto a mid-sized cracker,
okay, yeah,
that's about the size of this thing.
Okay, so it's pretty thin.
Really thin. There's a flip-out stand, lets you stand it up like an easel, and then you lean your smartphone against it to charge.
Lean it back like a Lazy Boy. Yeah. All right, yeah.
Qi, cordless charging, no cable nonsense.
Yeah.
Right? How many times do you get to a charger and either you don't have the charger, you don't have the cable, or the cable you have doesn't fit your phone, right?
Very, very legitimate concern, yes.
Now, I tested this on a few phones.
Yeah.
My wife's Pixel 8 works fine.
Mm-hmm.
But my Pixel 9 in its case, which is kind of hefty.
Yeah.
It's a little too tall and heavy. So okay. When I lean it against this, it tends to slide off.
Okay.
Now, listen, Urban Armor Gear. Lazy Boy has footrests.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. When I try to stand it up more, mm-hmm. the weight of my phone and the case makes that easel foot stretch out the
physics
back.
Physics takes over. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, okay.
Maybe on another. Hey, you think it'd work better on the moon?
At least Mars. Yeah.
They're sending more stuff up, and well.
Yes. Yes.
not sure it's enough of a charge though. Now you bring your own charger to work with this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's MagSafe. It's doing Qi charging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bring your own 20-watt charger.
Okay.
They recommend QC quick charge or PD power delivery.
Mm-hmm.
At least 15 watts, 20 is better. If you've got a 20-watt charger, it's going to charge your phone just a little bit faster. It's going to charge itself just a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
It does come with a 4-foot USB-C cable. It's rated to handle that charge rate and then some, so you won't have to go hunting for the one you were sure you had.
Yeah.
Now, for most contemporary smartphones, 5,000 milliamps good for a full charge, and at this writing, this UAG Slim Power Bank Plus stand is about $60 online.
Okay.
But like all products these days, new, shall we say, regulations may compel price increases.
Yeah, there is that coming along. So Urban Armor Gear, it's interesting you bring them up because their cases, I will tell you, I've reviewed their cases a few times. In full disclosure, my current case is not one of theirs, but I don't have mishaps with my phone. On the other hand, I will say that someone else in the house, I'm not going to refer to my wife by name or anything like that, but there is someone else in the house that, yes, has a tendency to drop her phone on a regular basis and beat it up and really test the power of those cases.
You can really tell that Ben's wife is out picking up pastrami for him right now.
She's not in the house. You're right. I definitely, when I'm talking about a durable case, Urban Armor Gear is one of the go-tos. That's what she's got on there right now.
It's a very good brand. I like their stuff. I made another choice for my stuff, but
yeah,
no detriment to them.
Yeah,
I've reviewed a number of their cases as well. They're very cooperative with press people, which we appreciate.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's product that we don't have to be at all embarrassed about recommending. It performs well.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been enjoying them for a number of years. They've got some really good designs that kind of play off of that Urban Armor too, which is kind of fun. You know, where I'm at in the country, those kinds of designs play very well. The camouflage and things like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Happy Halloween, right? Speaking of camouflage, you may see it as UAG when you go shopping.
Yes, yes.
UAG is Urban Armor Gear.
Definitely. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That is Marty Winston. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I will be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. SiteGround.com.
S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And I want to take a moment to really talk about how we address things, especially when you've been scammed. Okay, I get it. Getting scammed feels like stepping on a rake. It is humiliating, it's unexpected, and it hurts. But here's the very big, deep truth that a lot of people don't talk about it. Scams can hit anyone. They hit everyone. There are attempts constantly at getting our money, at getting our attention to whatever it is that they want, attracting us to do whatever it is that we don't want to do by tricking us. These scams hit people like CEOs of major corporations. They even hit IT pros. They even hit cybersecurity experts. So falling for a scam doesn't mean that you're foolish. It does mean that the scammers are good at what they do and that they are getting better and better and better all the time. They are working through all kinds of different plans and ploys. And yes, sometimes we get some of the simplest of them and we can easily identify them. But there are scammers out there that are getting more aggressive, getting more informed as to what works and what doesn't. And they will be continuing to come at us till probably the end of time. Scammers play psychology. They don't play intelligence. They go forward and they exploit a number of different things. They exploit your sense of urgency. They exploit the fears that we have. They exploit trust that we have in the wrong places. Not gullibility. I'm talking about trust. And they look for ways which those different things can be broken down. The best scams out there don't feel like scams until it's way too late. You need to be prepared. What I want you to do is something that I've talked about for a number of years, and that is report any time that you've been scammed. The silence out there helps those scammers. The whole idea of, I'm so embarrassed, I don't want to tell anybody, really is a bad approach. Speaking up helps everyone. It helps identify the new scams. It helps spread the word. So report it to everybody. Hey, look, I got the wool pulled over my eyes. Man, I cannot believe what they did. And this is how they did it. And by reporting this, I'm talking about warning everybody. Yes, contact the cops. Go forward and warn your friends, everybody. That embarrassing mistake that you made could be someone else's lifesaver. And amongst all of this, you do need to learn and you need to adapt. Every scam out there teaches a new defense. So you need to stay ahead of this. Scammers thrive on the secrecy and shame. Don't let them. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Laptops, thumb drives, and a wall charger. A sure sign that our nerd is here again. And now, with the quest of enriching your experience with computers, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-637-3888. And that is how you can reach out to us either way. We do answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, because we are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of our lives. Helping me make good on that promise of broadest look at technology, etc., is Steve Keske, who joins me now. Steve, what do you have for us this week?
We're all getting educated, especially teenagers, about cyberbullying.
Yeah.
But a newest thing out in the last 5 or so years is cyber stalking.
Oh, no, it's been around a lot longer than that.
No, it has been.
Since we were able to put our own information on the internet, there have been cyber stalkers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's getting more and more in the news, shall we put it.
In the news, but I think it's becoming more prevalent. People do go out there. And there are people who do absolutely innocent lookups of various friends that they have to see if they can connect up on Facebook to see how your high school mates are doing and stuff like that, whatever it is, you know, all of these different people along the way through your life. But then, of course, yes, cyber stalking is that going that extra distance where you become hyper, where the bad guy becomes hyper focused on a particular individual.
Or bad girl, too. But it goes sure, to the point of, well, shall we put it, is bullying is one thing when you're talking about one person. But when you start into the stalking is when you picking on that person's friends, you're picking on their coworkers.
I wouldn't even go to that extent. I wouldn't go to the level of saying that you're connecting with anybody. It's the intent that you have.
Yeah,
it is. It is more of the malicious nature within the heart of somebody who is going forward and looking up this information and finding out all they can about someone, or, yes, the cyberbullying, which is going to that extent of bullying the individual or bullying multiple individuals, all with, malice aforethought, thinking of ways to poorly interfere with people's lives.
Well, yeah, and nowadays, if I've got your telephone number,
yeah,
I can, you know, look you up, or I can ask, hey, where's this person, and what are they doing? And GPS will tell you. And that was one of the avenues this particular gentleman that I was researching was doing. Mm-hmm. And he knew and told the texting the particular victim involved what they were doing, and the fact that, oh, the police are not going to do anything for you. You know, even though you're going to talk to them, they're not going to. And it went on from there.
So let's note that it takes a little bit more than just knowing their phone number.
Oh, yeah.
But there are connections that can be made. There are different things along the way. It usually requires some level of access that is above the norm. Yeah, getting a hold of somebody's cell phone,
yeah.
Getting a hold of having somebody agree to this kind of thing. So, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the whole idea that they're texting back and forth and making this person's life miserable. They're and in his this particular case, the guy went out and he actually texted her friends using her phone number.
Okay, so
and
yeah,
you know, and making very nasty text messages to her friends, and. This went on for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the police, she had recorded one of his telephone calls. Mm-hmm. And they said, aha, okay, now he has stated what he's doing and we've got his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. They could actually prove it who this person was. And then went after him and took him to court.
Yeah.
And the defense attorney said, but he's been diagnosed with autism. We've got to cut him some slack on his conviction and all of, you know, because he's got problems. And the judge looked at him and said, nope.
Yeah. This is a court case that came out of England.
Yes.
And, of course, that is, there are a little bit of differences in how we handle things there oh, versus yeah. here, and that's okay. So, the judge threw the book at him, and,
oh, yeah.
well, they threw the book. What was the sentencing?
He was sentenced to a minimum of 9 years in jail.
Okay, so, you know, in some ways, it seems like a lot, and in other ways, in my book, for most of the ways, it's not enough.
No.
It all depends, you know, you've got to think about what happened. You've got to think about all of the different layers that are involved here. I will tell you that 9 years in jail... the bad guy in this case is going to wind up coming out and will be technologically restricted to some extent because the evolution over the course of 9 years of technology as we move forward is going to seriously put him at a disadvantage. We've seen people coming out of jail, coming out of prison after a number of years, and the entire setbacks that they've had because they haven't been involved with technology.
Oh yeah,
all the way along, and they're sitting here going, "What is this thing you're calling a smartphone? What is this artificial intelligence? Is that like is that like what they were talking about in the Terminator movies and all of that?" To which my response is, no, it's worse. No, I'm kidding. There's a lot to this. Maybe 9 years is a good amount.
To me, as a technocrat.
Yes.
Because I've been around as many years as I have been.
Sure.
I don't think 9 years was enough.
You know, from just the general perspective, I do think 9 years is still not enough. No. It's one thing to remove his ability to access technology, to use technology, to set him back like that. But there is supposed to be an additional amount of time for paying the debt to society. And yeah. I do agree that the people that particular guy terrorized, I do agree that they are going to be living with a lot of that for a lot longer than that 9 years.
Oh, yeah. In this particular person's case, he not only picked on one person, but he ended up picking on at least 8 other women.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm saying, no, 9 years is not enough. What you did was you destroyed their whole faith in themselves.
Sure.
And other people.
Yeah. There's a lot to this. Yep. And, you know, this is a topic that is the whole level of the whole playing field of cybercrime in all of its variations is still going to be unfolding for many decades to come.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as long as they've got the internet and technology, it's going to go on for probably a good 50 years yet.
Oh, yeah. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. I'm going to open up first by saying that a lot of what I'm going to have here in the next two segments, this one and the next one, is meant to be mostly apolitical. Computer Talk Radio exists to talk about computers and technology and about key items in relationship to that. So along the way, there are political topics, political hot buttons that may or may not come into one side or the other, or may come into both sides with people talking about it on either side. So look, everything here is not to talk about the right or the left. It's to talk about privacy and why I believe privacy really matters to all of us. Now, before I even go further, I'm also going to note that some of the general thoughts I'm going to cover here were presented by Jay Stanley, who is a senior policy analyst of the ACLU. And I'm not a member of the ACLU, and there are times where I think they go too far. There are other times where I think they don't go far enough. For those of you who are not fans of the ACLU, hold on. Even a stopped watch is right twice a day. Now, in this case, the United States government really has been unleashed upon all of us as citizenry, and they've provided a stranglehold on our freedoms, and so much of this truly does stem from our lack of understanding of privacy and how our freedoms are being whittled away. And I'm not saying anything about the current administration, the previous one, or any of the other previous administrations. This is an ongoing issue that has been going for far further than I've been alive. Do you have anything to hide? Most people don't have anything that they would like to hide from the government, or they don't think that. I know I don't really, but there are reasons to take the steps that we do to avoid pressure, to avoid problems. And I'm going to reference here a YouTube on video. It's called Don't Talk to Cops, and it features James Duane. He is an attorney. He's a professor. And this video is about an hour long, and it describes how if you are ever taken in for questioning, your only words should be, I want a lawyer. Don't say anything more. Don't ask for water. Don't ask for food. Don't do anything. Ignore what the cops say. Even if you're not a criminal, you have nothing to gain and possibly everything to lose without an attorney present. That is what is covered in that video. I don't disagree with that. As a matter of fact, borrowing from that video, there's a reference of Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson. He was on the bench from 1941 to 1954. He said back then, it was 75 years ago, roughly. He said that any lawyer worth his salt will tell the suspect in no uncertain terms to make no statement to the police under any circumstances. Okay, this video is a long video. It's an hour long. And it really talks that if you are being talked to and questioned, whether or not you think you're a suspect by the police, if they're talking to you, then they can and possibly will hang you for whatever they can. This is not any kind of big secret out there. There are situations you get pulled over for speeding. Look, go ahead, give them your license and registration and all of that. You know, that is a little bit different here than anything that's beyond this. But our privacy extends in so many different directions. Our privacy is something that we all need to be protective of. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about here is kind of piecing this apart. This is kind of addressing that big, huge idea that we think we have nothing to hide. Are you sure you have nothing to hide? Are you truly sure? That video I mentioned covers that there are tons of laws on the books. These are complicated laws. Police, lawyers, judges, and more all have to interpret these laws. And sometimes they get this wrong. And not sometimes. I'm going to say often. No, very often. This is something that there are people who spend tons of time. They spend their career focused in one very small section of law, not the vast, just huge expanse of law. We're talking about very, very strict specialties in this. If you are one of the lucky ones chosen to be investigated for something more, and I use lucky in quotes, then whatever the government has on you already can be used against you harshly, severely, and they're going to be looking for supporting information about you being a criminal, and they will ignore many other items. I will tell you that in some of the searches we've heard about, some of the different situations that people have gone to court, the police have looked over the websites you've searched, the forums you posted on, the apps on your iPhone, the places you've been, and they're all moving in a quest for more information. Now, everybody thinks that we don't hide anything, but I'll say this, everybody hides many things, even though they're not wrong. And I want to think about this in a different perspective for a moment. We get dressed every day in clothing. For what? To hide our bodies. We also don't want people to know how much we make. We don't let people know how much we bought our house for. We don't let people know what all of the doctor says when we go into the office. It's really none of anyone's business about any of these different things. It's none of anybody's business about my cholesterol level or what I buy at the grocery store or how often I read computer manuals searching for hidden features. This is not really applicable to general life out there. So we go to that next level. So some people realize that they have something to hide, but maybe not something that the government ought to gain the power to reveal. So let's dig in further. Let's cover the reasons why. Okay. So, I mean, I've got nothing to hide, but does the government have the authority to dig down through all of my Facebook posts, to go through all of the different things I have, to monitor all of my traffic on the internet? That's kind of creepy. Do they have the right to know all of these different things about me? I'll tell you, I survey information regularly about hacking, about theft, and other cybercrime. That's where I got the scam series that I cover every week here on Computer Talk Radio. I've visited the website for DEF CON, the annual hacker conference that happens in Las Vegas in August. I also study various virus programs, and something that's not really a secret to anybody here, I'm also a gun owner. But you may wish to hide some of the things you search for on the internet. No, you don't think about it, but a study of a few particular medications on WebMD in the right order could have you spotlighted for being a drug lab technician. Or perhaps you wanted to know what the big to-do was about having raw milk and why the government wants to highly regulate people who own their own cows and keep them from drinking raw milk. The government could make some fairly drastic assumptions about you, me, my activities, your activities, from this very short list of items. Even you, listening to this show, may be lifting an eyebrow as to if I'm some kind of nutcase or whatever else. Frankly, though, this really links through to all of this that I'm talking about. And I'll tell you, I couldn't fit all of the information I want to give you here in one segment. That's why I've got another segment coming up, and I will tell you, I'm going to give you just a quick idea of what's next. You may not have anything to hide, but the government, they may think so, and that could land you into bigger trouble. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Now, I've been talking about privacy and why it really matters. And to some extent, you may think I have a tinfoil hat on my head, but I promise you I don't. I want you to think through some of the different things I've been talking about and what I'm going to continue here with. So, you may not have anything to hide, but what if the government thinks so? What about all of the errors that are out there in programming? What of all of the bad algorithms that might show up in the various scanners? Frankly, the government might think you have something more to hide based on what little information they glean, and they may decide they get to check more. Then you wind up being thrown in some government database or being checked over with a fine-tooth comb. Do you trust your government? I know that we have to have government, but I know that I also don't trust this big, huge, massive government that we have. I'm a computer nerd, and I've seen some of the mistakes and problems that have been made in simple programs that don't really mean anything on the grand scale of things. but I don't trust the government databases, as I've seen errors from the best nerds that money can buy, and the government is all about what? Buying from the lowest bidder. I mean, that should scare you right there. Look at this a different way. How many little old ladies or newborn babies have you heard about being on the government no-fly list as they were terrorists? Need I say more about this? So you may ask, okay, why would the government go after me? So left or right, if you don't think abuse of power is involved in one section of the government, in one specific bill or another that I could name here on this program, then perhaps you know of another area where our government is abusing power. Perhaps it's not that, but a mindless politician seeking to further their career as a police officer, or a police chief, or a lawyer. Perhaps it's retaliation. And not even retaliation against you, but someone who thinks like you. A quotation attributed to Cardinal Richelieu is often invoked. Give me six lines written by the hand of the most honest man, and I'll find something in them to hang them by. That's kind of creepy. It's kind of scary. And it's out there. It should be sparking the thoughts in your head right now. It should be having you think about what our government might intend on doing in the future. And that's why we have to make sure that we stop things before they move further. And you may not care. You may not even think about hiding certain things, but you may be discriminated against because of those. Think about the things you've heard where government has stepped in across our country. Think about all of these different ideas. Certain areas are mandating that you can't buy more than 12 ounces or 16 ounces of soda in a movie theater. Other areas are suggesting you should pay a candy tax or whatever else. Do you buy a certain medication for blood pressure? Could your life insurance go up because of that? Yeah, perhaps it could. We have something out there, and it has started off with the idea of bringing data in and just analyzing it. And initially, it was just about our company, our small department. And then it moved to something bigger. Data mining has been going on for a number of years, and it has become insidious. Your credit limit, and therefore your score, is affected based on what other customers shop at the same store as you do. Did you know that? Your bank has information about where you shop the very instant that you make a purchase. You don't think so? I know. I have an alert that pops up after a recent, well, it's not so recent now, but after a scary event. So every purchase, every withdrawal, every deposit, every refund, everything that has to do with any of my bank accounts, I get an alert. I don't make it away from the counter at the deli before I have an alert. That's how fast it is. It comes to me right away. The bank has that same information. If you have an Apple card, you can watch all of these different things. It can give you all kinds of insights in regards to how you've spent your money over the course of the past month, the last 6 months, the last year, and so forth. Privacy is about much broader values than just hiding things. Ayn Rand, she noted that civilization is the progress toward a society of privacy. The savage's whole existence is public. And now, where are we? We are there. We're monitored when we make a purchase, when we log into a website, when we offer information about whatever we do, whenever we start using Facebook willingly. Netflix is uncanny in that it watches what I view, and it decides about my behaviors and suggests movies to watch. It knows me, as well as my wife, as to if I'll like this movie or that movie. We tie into all of these different location-based tools, whether it's the old Foursquare or Yelp or whatever other review program we might be involved in, and it notes all kinds of different things, and it can also be uncovered. All of that data there could note if we had checked out of a place 5 minutes before a tragedy happened. And that can be scary. What happened to the ability to share with our loved ones in private, to spend time away from judgmental minds and peering eyes? It's gone away. Every year, on the 4th of July, we celebrate our Independence Day. We're talking about the day where we broke free from King George and told him it was no business how we ran our lives. But now our government can pursue us for things we researched years ago, things we did a decade ago. As databases expand and they have more information than we could even fathom, there are lasting consequences to things like this. And I hope that I've revealed a little bit more of the importance of maintaining the balance of power between individuals and the state, who data mines everything. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and IT, and all of that. Ryan reached out to me. I keep hearing that IT jobs pay well, and I've also heard that if you're just in it for the money, you aren't going to get far. Is that true? All right, so this is something that we've been discussing in the industry for a while. Getting into IT just for a paycheck, just for the big paycheck, is trying to become the next Gordon Ramsay just because you like eating. Yes, the money can be good if you get up to the top, but the people who truly thrive, the ones who are raking in all the cash, aren't just there for the salary. They're the ones who genuinely love technology. They're the ones who they go forth. They've been tinkering for years, experimenting, and they have been solving problems on their own because they can't help themselves. They just are fascinated by it. They're passionate about it. And passion will beat a paycheck chaser every single time. If you are someone who lives and breathes technology, and you're not just showing up for a 9-to-5, it doesn't mean you have to stick to working all kinds of crazy hours. There's plenty of jobs in IT that allow for a fairly normal schedule, but there are times where you will wind up working in the wee hours of the morning. So you've got to be... You have to be someone who really enjoys the entire realm of IT. If you're there just to get rich in tech, you're going to be competing against other people who are actually obsessed with programming, with automation, with debugging, all of these different items just for fun. And employers, good employers, can tell if someone is just going through the motions versus someone who really gets really nerdy about it and they love solving those complex issues. Now we get even deeper into this in that the best paying roles, the ones that are going to really return on your investment, they require a very deep specialized knowledge. I'm going to go with one particular segment of the industry, cybersecurity. And if you want a high-paying cybersecurity job, you're going to be the type who enjoys tearing apart systems just to see how they work. You're going to be the person who sits there and looks at malware and goes, oh, wow, as much as it's bad, it's really cool to see how they did this. And there's a fine line there. And this is something where you have to get into a lot of various specialty items. You get into these, what are called white hat hacking courses, and even into, you'll take courses on gray hat and black hat, but only to build your knowledge of what the bad guys do. I've talked with some of the cybersecurity folks over my career, and it's always a fun, fascinating conversation with them because they see a lot of different things of where all of this can go wrong, and they are working hard to protect all of us from those bad guys. Another thing, too, here is that tech is constantly changing, and it changes fast. I mean, 2 years ago, most of us were not really talking about AI. The few that were already using it and checking it out. I was one of those. I was very fascinated by it, having been fascinated by this idea of the language model, and now it's the large language model, and eventually it'll evolve beyond that. But I've been fascinated by that since early programs like there's one called Eliza from way back in the day. And what we see now is just a further advancement on that. So tech changes, and these days it's evolving at warp speed. Casual interest in this is just not going to cut it. You're going to have to be training constantly, doing deep dives into all of these different new frameworks, the scripting languages, and even just the basic general tech trends. You're going to have to be doing that on your own time. If you are not truly a self-starter, a self-learner, if you don't enjoy troubleshooting and problem-solving, you are going to be stuck in some of these mid-level jobs while all of the nerds are just flying by you. And there are going to be a lot of different things that come with this, along with the fact that you have to be able to not only do all of this, but you have to communicate well. You have to be able to go through and explain this, manage it, make business cases for all of the different things you're doing in technology. And you have to be able to do this with people who don't even understand tech. So you have to be into it to a very, very deep level. If you don't, if you are not one of these people, yes, you can burn out. And this is because it's not glamorous. It is not one of those things that I would suggest for the faint of heart. Yes, we do have outages. We have different troubleshooting things that we have to do. We have to find our joy in the problem solving, the puzzle solving issues of technology, even during the point where those things go wrong. If you can't handle that, if you are just in it to get a paycheck, you're not going to get very far, both in the industry, but also, I'm afraid, probably in life as well. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, site ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Caleb has a question, and it is a recurring question. I've been hearing this ever since I started on the radio many years ago. Why does my computer slow down over time, even though I keep it updated? And look, I get it. We all go through this. It's like you've got this car that runs perfectly when it's new, but after years of use, it just starts to feel sluggish. It's no longer really operating the way you originally bought the car for. You know, over time, with computers, background processes, software bloat, accumulated digital clutter can just slow everything down, just like your car's engine might need some attention from the mechanic after thousands of miles. Fortunately, you can do a few different things to keep things running smoothly. Regularly clear out any of these unnecessary startup programs that might be running in the background and slowing things down. Everybody seems these days to want to install their own little widgets that go in the system tray, even though you use it, that particular program. I'm thinking of Adobe right now. I use it maybe once every 3 months or so. But no, I've got a widget that every time I install it or update it, it's loading this widget in. I clear those out. Also, uninstall any software you're no longer using. Most of these programs will leave behind all kinds of different processes that eat up your system resources, especially if they're loading anything in the services, in the system tray, in various areas which are always running. One of the other things, too, to kind of restore some of this is to think about upgrading your storage to a solid-state drive if you're still using a hard, you know, the old-fashioned hard drive. This can seriously, significantly improve your performance. Also, think about the upgrades to the SSD. These days, we are getting faster and faster solid-state drives, and those are key items to really improve the speed of your computer. Memory, too, if you are running 4 gigs of RAM, that's going to really hinder you. Think about upgrading your memory that way, going on up to 8 or 16. My primary system has 32 gigs of RAM, and I don't have any problems with all of the programs I'm loading in there, but I still will look at the next memory jump up the next time I upgrade my system, my hardware. I also want you to think about checking for any malware, any adware, any hidden malicious software. And you can run any kind of scan across your system. Yes, the Windows Defender, it sits there and it does a great job of keeping a lot of this out of there. But some of this stuff does come along and it purports to be a good thing for your computer. Just think about all of these different applications. Different packages will review that particular software that is being different, especially in the adware realm. Look, just like giving your car a tune-up, these steps are going to help restore a lot of that power, help your computer feel fresh and responsive again. And I strongly suggest that. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.